From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, April 13th, 2018. And on this day, there's a pro-gun rights rally tomorrow in Augusta, but contrary to what you might have heard, guns are not welcome. And we'll look at how some say Maine's long waiting list for in-home care for kids with disabilities is hurting those kids. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Norway Savings, supporting the colorful vision of Maine's business owners. Live your life in color. NorwaySavings.bank.
The organizers of a pro-Second Amendment rally in Augusta tomorrow are urging people to come out in support of gun rights, but to leave their guns at home. The afternoon rally will be held on the plaza between the State House and the Cross State Office Building in an area designated as a gun-free zone. But as A.J. Higgins reports, promotion of similar events being held at state capitals in other states may have confused the issue.
Gun rights advocates will gather in more than 45 state capitals Saturday, organized by the National Constitutional Coalition of Patriotic Americans. The event's participants were urged in some states to bring their unloaded rifles to the rallies. But here in Maine, rally organizer Dave Goulier of Blue Hill says that's not going to be allowed.
The rally in Augusta tomorrow at 2 o'clock is actually in a gun-free zone. There are no weapons allowed. Loaded, unloaded, it doesn't matter. There are no weapons allowed at this rally.
Goulier says confusion ensued around the issue after some media outlets reported that unloaded guns could be brought to the rally. Capitol Police Chief Russell Govan said his security team will be in place to ensure that participants understand the restrictions.
You know, people can't bring guns here to this particular event, unlike other state houses. And hopefully people listen and hear that, and we have a nice peaceful event where they can get their message out.
Organizer Dave Goulier says he and other gun rights supporters have felt like outsiders during the national debate on gun control, reluctant to share their views at a time when school shootings and other instances of violence have cast the national spotlight on students and their families. Nearly a month after hundreds of thousands marched through some of America's largest cities in support of tougher gun control laws, Goulier says it's now time for him and other gun rights advocates to have their say.
Well, I think so much has been said on the other side about things they want to do to take away rights of gun owners. It just seems like it's been a slow, steady process of kind of chipping away of the bigger picture of what gun owners have right now. I mean, they want to take away different parts of our rights of it.
In addition to presentations by Maine gun enthusiasts, Saturday's State House rally will also feature appearances by several of this year's Republican candidates for governor and Congress. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
Maine voters will decide on an initiative that would fund in-home care for older people or people with disabilities. That care helps with daily activities from bathing to medication management. The state Senate today voted to hold a public hearing on the measure before Mainers vote on it, but the House chose to send the issue directly to the public. Mal Leary has more.
Because the House and Senate disagree, there are no hearings on the controversial proposal that will raise an estimated $310 million a year. Most senators argued that a public hearing would help to educate the public about the issue they will vote on, but others argued that a campaign before the election would serve the same purpose. The initiative would create a new 3.8% tax on income above the Social Security tax threshold of $128,400 a year. The tax would fall equally on employers and workers. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Hundreds of Maine children with developmental disabilities are on a wait list to receive support services in their homes. These services help kids learn independent skills so that they can function in daily life. But the wait is so long, sometimes extending for years, that some families say their kids regress to the point where they have to be placed in residential group homes. Critics say the lack of support during critical childhood years sets kids up for a life of dependency. Patty White has our story.
Each day, Kathy Dion returns home from work. Her son Ben is sitting with his iPad in their living room.
Hi, Ben. How are you, buddy? High five, Mom.
Ben is 24 and has autism. He's nonverbal, so he uses the iPad to communicate.
Did you work today?
Paris. Farmers. Union.
Nice.
Ben is not only able to work a few hours a week at Paris Farmers Union filling bags of birdseed, he's able to be on his own for a few hours each day after he gets dropped off from a day program. Achieving this kind of independence, says Dion, was a painstaking process.
Everything that we've taught Ben, it's not just, well, it's going to take a couple of months. It's always years. You know, 7 years to potty trained, 6 years to tie your shoe. It took a year and a half for him to learn to unlock the doors.
Dion says Ben was able to learn these skills because of the support he got from in-home services. From the time he was 4 years old till he was 20, a behavioral health worker would spend about 20 hours a week with him. As he approached adulthood, the focus was on helping Ben learn a routine to come home on his own. Each step had to be broken down. He learned to open and shut the outside door, then unzip his bag to get out his keys for the next door, open and shut that door, put his lunchbox on the refrigerator, then settle down in the living room where he likes to watch videos on his iPad until his parents get home.
A Dorito casserole.
How did we get there? Well, it took years to get there, but it is an amazing thing to watch and see and witness.
But Dion's experience is in stark contrast to what many Maine families are currently experiencing.
Vanilla birthday cake!
You know what, Haley? I don't have any vanilla birthday cake.
Like most 12-year-olds, as soon as Haley Carr arrives home from school, she's hungry.
Banana birthday cake.
Did you have that at school today?
Banana birthday
cake. Haley has autism, anxiety, and obsessive-compulsive disorder. Her verbal skills are limited, and she needs help with basic tasks. Her mom, Lindsay Carr, has to keep her eyes on her constantly, like when Haley suddenly walks away from her snack of vanilla ice cream.
Now she's going to do the bathroom. We will follow her in because she needs assistance.
Bye, Mama.
Bye. And that's another thing. She uses the bathroom quite often, and she really does need assistance every time she goes. Just the presence of somebody being there makes her do things correctly.
Carr and her husband have two other kids and a grandmother to take care of. Carr says for Haley to develop these life skills, she needs in-home support.
That's my biggest issue right now, is the lack of support and, you know, feeling like I can't do this correctly for her.
Haley is supposed to get in-home services, but she's been on a wait list for essentially 3 years. During that time, she's received intermittent help. One worker came for 3 months, another for four. That last worker left in September. As they wait again, Carr says Haley is regressing.
She's as big as me. The behaviors are, to a point, violent, aggressive, scary sometimes. You know, there's property destruction, there's bathroom issues, daily living skills that are still not met.
I spend hours each day talking to families who are in absolute crisis.
Katrina Ringrose is a children's advocate at Disability Rights Maine. She sifts through a stack of papers that's the wait list for kids with developmental disabilities to receive in-home services. There are currently about 300 kids on the list.
You could see that there is a youth who's been waiting 1,002 days to receive a service that has been determined medically necessary.
Ringrose says many kids are waiting for 15 to 20 hours of support per week. When they go without, their behavior can deteriorate to the point that some families resort to placing them into a higher level of care at a residential facility. That not only creates a traumatic situation for the family, says Ringrose, it can also have lifelong consequences.
When you move a child to a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week institutional setting at a young age, you're really developing a dependence upon the system that then is hard to break as you grow into young adulthood.
every year that we miss out on providing that support and that early intervention for children is a year you don't get back.
Lydia Dawson is executive director of the Maine Association for Community Service Providers. She says the wait list for in-home services has grown by 50% over the past year and a half. She thinks much of the problem can be traced to reimbursement rates that haven't increased for a decade. Many providers have shut their doors. Those that remain, Dawson says, struggle to provide attractive wages for what can be a very challenging job.
People just aren't willing to do that for minimum wage anymore, and that's really all the reimbursement rate will provide for at this point.
A bill in the legislature would boost reimbursement rates for these services so that behavioral health workers get a small bump in pay to just under $13 an hour. Maine's Department of Health and Human Services doesn't have a position on the bill. A spokeswoman said in an email that DHHS is working to address capacity issues and connect children and families to community resources in the interim. But those services have been elusive for the Carrs. Recently, Lindsay Carr turned to a solution that she never thought she'd have to. She's now trying to place her 12-year-old daughter, Haley, in residential care. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
And finally today, the second of two pit bulls shot yesterday afternoon in Buxton has been found alive. Both are expected to survive. Buxton Police Chief Tony Klein, or rather Troy Klein, says officers brought one dog to an animal hospital where it was treated for possible shotgun wounds and released. But the second dog, a white pit bull with brown spots named Tessa, reportedly ran into the woods. Chief Klein says around 8:30 this morning, his office got word that Tessa was sitting in a farm stand parking lot. One of her owners was able to take possession of her, and she seemed to have been hit with shotgun pellets in the hindquarters and tail. The chief says while the dogs have been left in an unfenced backyard, it's not known if they stayed there, and it's not at all clear what happened.
There's still somebody out there that's taken it upon themselves to shoot an animal, and a domestic animal at that. And we'd like to know, you know, who that person is.
Klein's asking whoever shot the dogs to come forward and talk with police. He says the department learned this afternoon that a person in Connecticut has offered to pay veterinary expenses for the two dogs. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine, for Friday, April 13th, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.